Gardner added, "But I'm still mad at you." In anticipation of ABC's move to the West Coast, Eisner commissioned a new ABC building from Italian architect Aldo Rossi, who had snubbed the Euro Disney competition, to be built on the Burbank campus. Iger was promoted to a new position in Los Angeles, though still not to the Disney presidency. He would oversee ABC, but also be responsible for international, the same as Ovitz's ill-fated assignment, and an area in which Eisner was relatively uninterested, in part because he didn't enjoy foreign travel. To replace Iger in New York, Eisner tapped Steve Bornstein, the head of ESPN. Given the success of ESPN, Bornstein was an obvious choice, even a possible rival to Iger. A native of New Jersey, he'd worked at the public broadcasting affiliate in Columbus, Ohio, before joining a still-fledgling ESPN in 1980, and became president and CEO 10 years later. Under his leadership, ESPN had become even more wildly profitable than anyone had expected. In 1999, its operating profit was a remarkable $750 million. The number of households with cable had soared during Bornstein's tenure from 50 to 90 million. With its heavily male 18 to 45 viewership, a much coveted audience for advertisers, ESPN could command steep advertising premiums. But Bornstein's master stroke was a $9 billion deal with the National Football League that guaranteed ESPN 8 years of Sunday night football games for the full season and secured 8 years of Monday night football for ABC, as well as the broadcast rights to two Super Bowls, the most coveted event on network television. The contract not only conferred a near monopoly on the most important sports programming, but under a little-noticed provision in ESPN's agreements with its cable operators, securing a full season of NFL games gave ESPN the right to raise its subscription fees 20% per year. Bornstein moved aggressively to do just that, and ESPN was able to double its per-subscriber fees from $1 to $2. Still, at the time, a record $9 billion deal for sports programming seemed audacious and risky. Bornstein was grateful that Eisner backed his NFL strategy, something that the more cautious Cap City's ABC leadership had been reluctant to do. And Eisner let Bornstein launch ESPN Magazine in partnership with Hearst, another idea that Cap City's Tom Murphy had resisted. The magazine was an immediate success. Eisner was willing to spend money when he believed in an idea. Indeed, in Bornstein's view, he sometimes seemed too willing. Eisner insisted on launching ESPN retail stores, though Bornstein opposed the idea. "Men don't shop in malls. It's that simple," he argued. The effort was abandoned after a handful of test stores failed abysmally. More important, Eisner let Bornstein run the ESPN business with minimal interference. Eisner came to ESPN headquarters in Bristol, Connecticut from time to time, and he loved to talk about his enthusiasm for sports in his letters to shareholders. He boasted about ESPN's burgeoning profits in meetings with analysts. But Bornstein knew that Eisner didn't really care that much about sports. He knew real dyed-in-the-wool sports fans, and Eisner wasn't one. The dynamic changed when Bornstein arrived at ABC.